One of the most remarkable 19th century Americans was a black missionary named William Shepherd. He spent much of his life an ocean away from his native Virginia. Shepherd first went to Africa with another missionary, a white man. When his partner died, Shepherd explored parts of Africa where no Westerner had ever been. In the Belgian Congo, he also saw the horrors of empire. In fact, he met the novelist Joseph Conrad, who later wrote about the savagery of the Congo in Heart of Darkness. Pagan Kennedy tells the story of William Shepherd in her biography. It's called Black Livingstone.
He had decided to get into the forbidden city of the Kuba people, who were people who lived deep in the heart of the Congo jungle and really were not interested in dealing with Westerners at all, quite wisely because the Belgians then controlled the Congo and were very brutal in their harvesting of rubber. And so he managed through some very clever tricks to become the first Westerner ever to enter the kingdom of the Kuba people and to live among them. And then he brought out just a treasure trove of art. These people are generally considered to be some of the greatest artists of Central Africa. And he brought, really in a great, a triumphant, you know, move, brought all this art back to the U.S.
All kinds of things to talk about then when you're thinking about William Shepherd. One of the things that's fascinating is that it must have been very unusual for a black missionary, even with a white partner, to be sent into Africa at that time. Is that right?
Yes, it was. And he then found himself later on in a very difficult position because as the truth about the Congo began to come out, the Europeans and Americans began to realize that King Leopold, who then had control of the Congo, was essentially turning it into one of the largest forced labor camps that had ever been. Eventually, 10 million Africans would die as the Belgians and other Europeans came in to harvest rubber. And so the Kuba people that he loved so much were then turned into slaves. These proud aristocrats had ropes around their necks, were forced to go off and harvest rubber. And so, in some ways, rather unwillingly, he became one of the foremost activists against the Belgian Congo.
I'm curious to get a little better sense of who this man was, because he must have been a very special kind of man to get the acceptance of the Africans whom he saw. And I don't get the sense that it was just because he was black.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, the Africans, the Congolese, when they looked at Shepherd, they, you know, really didn't have the same conceptions of race as the Americans, obviously. They saw this man striding up to them in a pith helmet and a white linen suit and puttees and these weird shoes with laces on them. And so he looked every inch the Westerner to them. They called him the black white man, sort of saw him as a white man who happened to be black because he belonged, you know, completely to an alien culture. And yet, because of his sympathies with them, you know, he really had a much greater ability to melt into African culture than many of the Americans and Europeans were there, largely, I would guess, because he grew up in Jim Crow America and experienced, you know, horrible, brutal racism in his childhood. But he was able to really wrap his mind around their way of seeing things. He also learned their languages very quickly. And at one point, he was sort of hailed as a reborn African king when he first entered the Kuba kingdom.
What was it? Was it the fact that it was rubber in particular that made this so dangerous a time for the Africans there?
Yes, it was. I mean, in the beginning when the Belgians had moved in, rather King Leopold, who was really the person behind it all, the rumor was of ivory and gold. But at the time, the West was going through a high-tech revolution. There was suddenly telephone lines, telegraphy, rubber tires on bikes. Suddenly, everything that Westerners seemed to depend on needed rubber. The wires needed insulation. So there was just this tremendous demand for it.
What about Shepherd then? He got there, he saw this. Did he come out and try to tell the world about the human rights abuses he'd seen in the Congo?
Well, I think Shepherd's great passion, really, in the end, was to tell Americans about the Kuba. again, he had grown up in a time where Africans were seen as savages, where he himself, living in a small town in Virginia, would have heard about lynchings. His people did not have the right to vote. Even when he went back to the United States as a great hero, decorated by Queen Victoria, he was not able to sit down at a table with the white people in his town.
You'd think he would leap at the chance to say, see, this is what the white people are doing in the Congo. But instead, what he did was to extol the virtues of the Cuba?
Yeah, I think he felt that that was what he could say and be understood, as he would have put it. Essentially, he said, you know, I can't get up in front of a white audience in America and talk against white colonialism. Nobody will listen to me. You've got to do it. He eventually did come out against the Belgians, although he was afraid, you know, quite reasonably afraid to do it, because it was a very risky thing to do for a black man and during Jim Crow to speak out against white colonialism. But he did, and he was quoted by Mark Twain in Twain's book King Leopold's Soliloquy, and became an important figure in that movement.
It's such an amazing story in a way, because he was just one man caught in a time of terrible turmoil and having the complication of being unwanted at home in some ways. It is a kind of an amazing thing to think about, being trapped in the middle of that kind of political struggle and moral struggle and trying to decide what the best use of his ability was and how much to speak out.
You know, it's interesting because he was such a political man, and his writings that remain are just, I don't know how else to describe them, as incredibly cheerful. But there are some interesting places where his voice kind of breaks. And one of those is when his boss, Morrison, ordered Shepherd to go in. This was around the turn of the century. He ordered Shepherd to go in and stop a massacre where 500 Zappo-Zap warriors who were in the pay of the Belgians had basically had a stranglehold on an entire region and were forcing people into a stockade and killing them. And Shepherd, you know, at that point, he said, I was ordered to go stop this massacre, and I was afraid. And that's one place where his voice breaks, and you can sense his resentment toward his boss, even though he also knew it was the right thing to do. And he did go, and he did, in fact, stop the massacre. Brilliantly, what he did was he pretended to be a Belgian, an emissary from the Belgians, coming to look on approvingly at what the Zappo-Zaps were doing. So he said, you know, oh, how many people have you killed? How many? Let's see what you've done. Show me the bodies. Why, this is wonderful. And he had to look at bodies of people he knew, friends of his, and pretend to smile and approve of what had happened. He's saying, you know, you really put the people in their place. This will really keep them down. And he took pictures and he wrote notes, and he came out with all the evidence of what was going on, and he stopped the massacre in that way. They went right to the Belgians and said, look, we have proof. The Belgian flag was flying over this massacre, over these piles of dead bodies. And so he did manage to stop it, and that's, you know, his life is just adventure after adventure like that, and he really was an incredible man who just knew what to do in the moment.
Peggy Kennedy. Her biography of William Shepherd is called Black Livingstone.